Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Licky Lips Lou. That was fantastic.
That was all right. Terrifying.
What we're going to get right into it. Here's the deal. We've been on live stream while we're recording these episodes. We recorded the last one, which was about commercial versus creative mixes, and we were for 30 minutes was just like fucking around on Twitch, messing with ChatGTP to come up with podcast topics. We've done so many different things, like what would an East LA Latin gangster, how would they describe a compressor?
And the best part, Papi,
it was fantastic.
It was great.
What an e-girl or an anime girl would use, how would they would describe?
There was a lot of likes in that one.
Yeah, in Hawaiian Pigeon. So it's just like fun. Anyway, so this podcast episode, you saw the title. It's 10 creative uses of an audio compressor. So what we're doing is I asked ChatGPT, what are 10 uses? And what we're going to do is read through them, and we're going to probably talk about them and expand on them. And here's the thing. The premise is we actually haven't read through this list of 10s. We literally pulled it up and started recording. So we're going to describe these, and then we're going to talk about whether or not it was a great idea, it's a good idea, if it's a bad idea. And,
yeah.
And in practicality, how do you practically get it to work? So here are a list of 10 creative uses of an audio compressor listed by AI. Number one. Sidechain compression. Using a compressor to duck one track when another track plays, creating a pulsing effect or adding rhythmic interest.
I do like this.
Is that creative as much as it used to be? But I mean,
it depends on your approach to it. I think it's both. I think it's creative in the context of dubstep and things of that nature.
You can use it creatively.
Yeah, you can use it creatively to kind of create push. For instance, the way some people would use 4 to the floor to just kind of fill in that space and just kind of get movement. Maybe it's one of those where it's just heard, not felt. But sometimes you want it felt, but you don't want the kick too loud in the mix. So maybe you have it duck the bass a little bit and you time the release of it so it has like this rhythmic return.
Mm.
So you can use it creatively. I find myself more often than not using it more surgically, like just trying to get a specific frequency out of the way. Because one thing that I don't see on this list is using sidechain compression on a frequency basis.
So here's the thing, too. I think more often than not, if it's audible sidechain compression, especially like if it's connected with the kick drum to the bass, or to harmonic or melodic elements in the mix, that's something that's typically done by the producer before it gets to the mix engineer.
Yeah.
If it's very audible, it's not typically something that's done by the mix engineer.
Yeah.
So that's another thing too. But although I also use sidechain compression in the mixing phase, But I don't, I use it in a way that generates headroom, but without making it audible.
Yeah.
Which, that is a very creative use that is typically not done by the mixer in most use cases.
I have a weird trick question, and it's not a trick question, but like a mixing trick question. I'm curious if you do this as well, because I got the idea from sidechain compression, but it's not a compressor. Using the sidechain input on Soothe on your music bus to reference your vocal bus. Finding pockets of frequency that, you know,
I've heard vocals
move.
Sure.
Yeah, vocals move in range. And nowadays you're starting to see like the vocal EQ where it has the dynamic range on it. So the dynamic EQ function on it. But its sidechain input doesn't allow you for it to like track other sources into it and have it be based off of that.
So that is a common creative use case for Soothe. People do that. I don't do that. Bob Horn uses that sometime with Track Spacer rather than Soothe.
I haven't tried that.
Waves
one.
Factory uses Track Spacer. It's basically like a Gullfoss kind of thing.
Gotcha.
But you can do an input sidechain, and he'll do it on like just the low end or just the mid range or something like that. Yeah. I don't typically do that, although I'm going to be so against the grain here.
Mm-hmm.
I've used Soothe a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I've used it a lot. I've experimented a lot, and I leave it on a lot. I own it.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like the sound of it.
You got four out of five times. Yeah, you got to pull the mix knob on.
No, I do that, and it's just like I typically find ways to make it sound better for what I like.
Yeah.
But that being said, it's a fantastic tool, and I think that I'm going to try that next time. I've heard people doing that. I want to do that. Maybe it'll actually be better.
Yeah.
The way that I typically do it is I just pull up like FabFilter onto different things, and then I just see what are... If I need to do this, I kind of do... You know how it does the cross-reference?
Yeah.
And it turns red on sections that are like doing it each other.
I think like my bias is just on the... I grew up listening to rock, so I'm used to like vocals being a little more in the track versus on the track. And because of that, I like using the sidechain compression for vocals versus the music so that I can keep the vocals a little more in the mix without taking too much or making it audible in the music blending. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. I think that's a great creative use of that as well. Perfect for this episode.
Yeah.
Neutron 2, I don't know if the new Neutrons do it, but Neutron 2 used to do this thing where just like the Fab filter to show you like masking
frequencies.
But you can link it. So if you dip one, it boosts the other.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So not like with Fab filter, just show you which ones are masking, but it doesn't affect the other one. But with Neutron 2, it's like if you boosted one, it dipped the other in the same exact frequency, and you can see them both move in a single plugin. It's really cool. You can link them. I don't know if it does that. That was such a great idea that I use sometimes, and I haven't used it all recently. Anyway, that's a great idea. Sidechain compression, even if it's just multiband or a dynamic EQ.
Yeah,
I use that. We use that quite often. Number two, emulating tape saturation. Running audio through a compressor with a high ratio and low threshold to add warmth, harmonic distortion, and saturation similar to tape machines. I don't know why it specifically says tape machines.
Yeah.
Is it because of the third
high
order
ratio with a low threshold? That sounds like it's limiting it.
I mean, solid state FET kind of adds third order harmonics like tape.
Yeah.
It's not tape, but it adds like Transformers adds that third order harmonic sound. I wonder if the point is like using saturation. I use this all the time. Like using compression for saturation.
Yeah. This is why I like Verimuse, and I think I've communicated that in the past, just because they're very like tube-based compression, like depending on the tubes, depending on the design of those, like how it, I guess, runs the signal through the tube, how they like just built it. It's like, okay, each one has its own tone, and that's why I like Verimuse so much.
Yeah. I like that too. And because of the tones as well.
Yeah.
You get to the point where you probably do this too, where we're choosing compression, not just settings, but also which compressors to use and which sounds to use. Based on the expected saturation tonality that's going to come out of it. Or if it's the hardware, we're using that hardware. Like I use my Comp 2A specifically when I need that fatter bottom, that scooped upper mid-range tubi sound, boosted top end tubi sound versus like something like an 1176 and both in the compressor. And even within the digital realm, the Purple Audio MC77 sounds different from
the 1176.
The CLA, CLA 1 versus the UAD 1 versus the different variations within the UAD world.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, you can almost EQ with a compressor, which I do a lot. Like I saturate and EQ with saturation often.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. Number three, if we can move on beyond that. Number three is parallel compression, mixing the dry and compressed signals to add punch and depth to a track without sacrificing dynamics.
Yeah.
I use Parallel not as often as Andrew Sheps.
I almost.
But I do it all often.
I'm not gonna lie. I don't think I do primarily Parallel versus regular compression, but I would say that my mixing style leans more towards that because, like, if I want something to punch harder, I'm a big fan of using Parallel, like squashing the signal.
It sounds different.
Yeah, it sounds different, like squashing the signal, but putting like a slow attack on it so the transient bleeds through enough, but it really like holds down that tail and then blending it back in. So it sounds a little more like there, that tail is up, it's louder, but there's also that little transient pop that's being added to it. So instead of like putting like a transient designer directly on the track, like using Parallel to actually help add transients, even though a lot of times we think of compression as something that's taming transients.
Yeah, I do think that. In that same sense, first off, it sounds different. Like yeah. when you blend in a hyper compressed or super compressed track or mix with a non mixed one, what you're doing is you're really just raising the valleys and of mm-hmm. so not you're not
the dynamic
crushing
range.
The transient. Yeah. Yeah, you're minimizing the dynamic range, but not by lowering the volume of the transients.
Yep.
So it's a different sound. And I also want to go a step further and say it sounds different when you have a plugin that has a mix wet knob
yep.
versus when you have a separate track and the dry is at a specific volume and you raise the volume of the wet signal. You're blending yep. in the wet signal to the dry sound. That sounds different as well.
Yeah. And you can take it a step further by saying you also EQ'd the parallel differently or saturated
the parallel for sure
yeah
yeah so I do think that when I do a mix knob what I'm doing is I like that compression and saturation that's going on but it's a little bit too much right now so I'm gonna back off a little bit
yep.
where like if I have a dry signal and then I'm blending in I duplicate the track I malt the track right or mm-hmm. duplicate the track and I hyper compress that one and I blend in the wet signal with volume what I'm doing is adding to it which is different that does sound different so
oh yeah
that's a great idea and I back off through the wet dry knob a little bit I mean it's just yeah. mostly a workflow thing but it's easier on the ears to hear like, the differences
I'll go as far as saying like I'll try to blend the two types like the mix knob and the parallel send just because like Pro FabFilter Pro C2, that one actually has the separate wet and dry output knobs, mm-hmm. and you can pan them differently and all that kind of stuff
cool.
if you wanted to. I usually don't mess with the panning myself. I haven't really found a practical use for it in my work, but it's really nice to like really compress something and then take the dry all the way down, bring it back the clean, and then blend in that dry within the same plugin. So if you don't want to go the extra channel route, or let's say you're in a version of Pro Tools, which nowadays shouldn't be the issue, where you've ran out of channels, then, you know, so be it. Use that plugin. Same process, but you can continue processing down the line.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I think that's a great idea. Number yeah. four is something similar I'm reading right now. New York compression. Blending heavily compressed and lightly compressed versions of a track to create a punchy and present sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not really different. It is a form of parallel compression, but again, it's specifically
more like a technique of parallel.
Yeah, it's specifically the workflow of blending in that hyper-compressed wet sound, bringing up the volume of it. It's what we were talking about, but instead yep. of a wet dry knob and you're like kind of blending the two in that way, it's you're bringing up the volume of the wet signal. So it's a malted or duplicated track that you're bringing up.
Like a good practical use of this would be like if you recorded live drums, but it was all close mic'd, you didn't have a room mic, so you kind of bust everything into one bus and then actually hyper compress that bus and suddenly the room bleed that it was very quiet at first now becomes a little more audible and now you have this kind of roomish mic kind of sound.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's great. Number five is vocal de-esser. Using a compressor to specifically target and reduce harsh sibilant sounds in vocal performance. I think that another creative use of a de-esser mm-hmm. is not just de-essing but like on a mix bus or just yeah. in general like on anything. I think de-essers not specifically for vocals is a great use.
So I do that with the Massey de-esser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think this is a little destructive.
I don't have the Massey de-esser.
I might be able to get it to you.
Well, that'd be cool.
Yeah. But fair warning, it's a mono plugin. So like you had to work it in dual mono when you want stereo.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Hey, but also the T de-esser.
That one's really good.
Yeah, yeah. That one's free too.
What I'll do with the Massey on the master bus is I'll just, cause it works on a fader and two knobs basically. The fader controls how much of the actual top end compression is happening. And then you have frequency and blend knob. I'll just compress the living shit out of the range that I want to with it. And then I'll actually use the blend knob to actually dial into the de-essing. So I'll start completely dry. And then I'll actually blend into how much de-essing is actually happening on that mix.
That's interesting. That's actually a really great use case for that.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, a de-esser is literally just
a compressor,
like a multiband compressor.
That only has top end band.
Yeah, that only has. It's like a less functional multiband compressor.
Yeah.
Single band. Anyway, that's another thing too. Also, using it on like acoustic guitars to get like the super top end stuff. Using it on mixes. I know mastering engineers have de-essers often as well.
Yeah.
At least the old school ones did. Stuff like that. Yeah, de-essers is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just, again, it's just a multiband compressor that is less functional. Number six, drum bus compression. I don't know why this is in a list of 10 creative uses. Drum bus compression, applying compression to all of the drum tracks together to create a cohesive and punchy drum sound.
Well, you know what?
How can you turn that into a creative?
I think that's creative. I think about it this way. When we listen to, and I'm going to use rock as the example, a lot of rock drums don't really sound like individual samples. It's a bunch of mics thrown into a room as one, and if the snare is being hit really hard on one and there's bleed into the other mic, sometimes you want to exaggerate that bleed to make the drum sound bigger than life. You know, the way that the drummer hears it, because he hears every hit, every resonating skin and everything. But sometimes a lot of people do like a lot of gating to get the bleed out and everything. Sometimes you kind of want to bring that out with compression. Sometimes you want to bring out certain characteristics of a drummer's performance with compression.
Yeah, no, that's true. A drum bus compression or any sort of like top down kind of bus compression is fantastic, I think. This is controversial here. I know a lot of people, specifically for like vocals, I know we're talking about drums right now, but for vocals, when I create a lead vocal bus, which typically is like the lead vocals and the various chorus verses or whatever, I also like to add the ad-libs and doubles in that because I love it when the compressor is triggered by the ad-libs. Because what it does is like it makes that ad lib just kind of jump in front of the lead vocals just a touch.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing tons of, I'm hyper compressing the ad libs in its own individual track before it goes to the bus. So it's not like jumping out per word.
Yeah.
But it's rather, it's like when it's there, it's pushing it a little bit more. And I'm not hyper compressing the bus to begin with. Like I'm doing a few dBs max. So
did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you do like a Vox Master?
I like that sound. All Vox, yeah, but like I don't typically do much on it. I do the most on like the lead box bus, the background vocals box, the harmonies box, or whatever it is. However, I decide to split up just like that.
But there might be like a final EQ or something.
Yeah, and like there's times where like I'll leave like if we have the drum bus, but there's like one percussion thing like a tambourine or something like that that's like making the compression sound weird, I'll like take it out of the bus so it doesn't compress the signal of the rest of the drum kit.
I'll do the same thing with my AllVox if like a certain like harmony stack is starting to conflict with the way that the Vox is supposed to sound in that. Cause I like doing like a final compressor on it, like only doing like one, maybe at max 2 decibels of compression, because I just like the way it kind of glues.
Yeah,
things,
it kind of like makes it switch back and forth between the focus.
But sometimes like you have that harmony stack that needs to be a little bit louder, but because there's so much energy in it, it just causes the compressor to do a little more in that moment. You're like, you know what? Take this one out.
Yeah. And that's where like parallel does good too. Like it can, it's kind of the in-between world. Anyway, that was number six, drum bus compression. I don't know why. That's not really a creative thing, but seven, pumping effect, using a compressor with a fast attack time to create a pumping effect on the entire mix. You know what? Pumping effect, that's true. Like, if you hyper compress something with a very fast attack time and a slow release time, well, medium release time, kind of like, kind of does this weird pumping thing, which is cool. Yeah. It's not sidechain pumping. It's actual, like,
it's like the kick hit and you heard just like a,
yeah, like you can really hear it like on a drum bus. Exactly. Yeah. Like a really fast attack with a medium release. You can hear it, kind of the release kind of suck it back in, which is also something that when you're not trying to do this, this is a great thing to listen for, because pumping is usually the main giveaway of like bad compression.
Yeah. Like when I get a song to master, actually this happened recently where like the kick was distorting and causing the mix to pump a little bit. And I sent it back to the client like, hey, I did a master on it anyways, but I just wanted to communicate. Like, I couldn't tell if this was a creative decision or if this was something I should be notating and telling you like to correct. But I heard like distortion and like a little bit of pumping in the kick. He's like, oh, no, that was intentional. I was like, OK, cool. Just making sure, because I felt the need to communicate it somehow.
No, that's for sure true. It's usually a sign of like a bad mix, but I think in that case, I'm trying to raise your microphone. Sorry, getting off topic here.
I got you.
But yeah, I think it's I think that is something that you can use creatively, but is oftentimes a mistake for a lot of stuff, and it's a really dead giveaway, like on masters or like buses of any kind.
Yeah. Which is why I'm actually a little more fond of doing parallel compression on masters nowadays.
Yeah, and then another thing too with the fast attack, another creative thing, I've talked about this before, something is something like the 1176, when you have a super fast attack and a fast release time with a lot of compression, it starts to distort.
Yeah.
And then you can use that attack knob and slow down the attack, and it turns into like a blend knob for the distortion.
Yeah.
So you can do less distortion by slowing down the attack. It's really cool, like an 1176 plugin. Don't use the CLA stuff that has the worst distortion. But if you have a hyper fast attack, hyper fast release, the fastest attack, the fastest release, and you have all buttons in mode, and then you kind of like blend, like you kind of compress a lot, it starts to distort. You slow down the attack time, it does less distortion, so you can figure it out. And it's a really cool specific like mid-rangey distortion, like that FET Transformers distortion thing. That's really, really cool, that I like a lot. Anyway, number eight, gating effect. Use a compressor with a fast release time and high threshold to create a gating effect on a track, creating a chopped or staccato sound.
Oh, yeah. I love this on drums. Basically, if you allow for enough of the transient to bleed through and you actually just kind of like have the rest of the signal held down, it almost sounds like a gate. But it's really just a very, very transient way of using the compressor.
Hold on. I don't think I've ever used a snare. Am I comprehending exactly what's going on? So say that again. With a very fast release time and high threshold, creating a gate effect on track, creating a chopped or staccato sound. So how do you use it?
So it's kind of explaining it weird, but the idea is you kind of want to allow for the, because I notice it's not talking about the attack.
So it's a super slow attack time with a very fast release?
Yeah.
Oh.
So when it actually hits it, it hits it very transiently and lets go.
So it does this effect
where you have, and for those of you listening, I'm sorry, I'm using this example with my hand, but signal passes through, it immediately ducks, and then it comes back. So there's that dip.
Yeah, and it's got that like super transient, like that pop at the beginning, especially.
It's almost like,
a
pre-delay timing for the release, if that makes sense. Like a reverb that you set a lot of pre-delay on, so you hear the word and then there's nothing, and then reverb tail.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's, you can especially start to hear that initial transient from like 15 to 30 milliseconds, but it especially is more apparent with like 60 to even 100 milliseconds attack time. That's really cool. I've never done a super long one like that. I just use Transient Designer plugins to do something similar. That's just how my brain is processing it, but that's interesting. Yeah, that's a great
way. I was a kid with
a
bad drum set with a band that was just like, yo, how do we get this snare to hit harder? And like, I just kind of like stumbled upon using it like that. I was like, wait, so if I speed up the release, that means like everything after the compressor should come up in volume too. And suddenly we got like longer snare chains and like reverb times from the room's natural acoustics were a little bit longer, and like all that kind of stuff was cool. But the thing that stood out the most was how much harder that snare sounded like it was hitting.
Use of transients, emphasizing transients. And so instead of saying gating effect, let's say like transient, shaping. Enhancing transients.
Yeah.
Yeah, shaping transients. rather than gating. Yeah, I think that's really useful.
Which
actually
is really funny. Oh my gosh, brings us to number nine. Emphasizing
number nine.
Transients, using a compressor with a fast attack time to emphasize the transient peaks of a track, making them stand out more. Wouldn't you technically make the slow attack?
Yeah. Okay, this is where ChatGPT is getting a little bit wonky.
Yeah, see, the gating effect wasn't explained fully right, because you could also slow down. Because on the gating effect, if you slow the release time, that means you let enough of that transient bleed through and it held down the rest of the signal, just like a gate would. But emphasizing transients, we understand what you meant, ChatGPT. In spirit, you were there.
And lastly, number 10, before we get to number 10, I want to say that this podcast is sponsored by our own podcast.
What?
If you like this podcast and you want more technical tips just like this, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to the exclusive episodes. For only $4 a month or $40 a year, you get access to 2 extra episodes every single week, hosted by me and Braden Flint, where we talk about technical techniques to better your songwriting, producing, mixing, and mastering. We go all over the board, and we actually reference and play clips from other professionals. So it's fantastic, direct from the source of actual award-winning producers, engineers, et cetera. So go check that out. mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. It's also the first link in the description of the episode and of the podcast. All right, number 10 is taming harsh frequencies. Using a compressor with a sidechain EQ to target and reduce harsh frequencies in a track, making it sound smoother and more pleasant to the ear. Now, only a few compressors do this. This is not sidechaining and kind of returning an ascend from a different track. But what you're doing is the sidechain, so when a signal goes into the compressor, sometimes it splits up. Well, it always splits up the audio, right? Yeah. So it goes from the regular audio going in and duplicates the audio into a sidechain detection circuit versus the actual compress circuit. And what the audio sidechain circuit does is, if you high pass filter that, that's where the low end is still being compressed and it's still passing through the device, but the sidechain or the detection circuit is not seeing the low end, so the low end is not triggering the compressor on the main compression circuit. So that was a little bit confusing, but you could do the same thing. So instead of just high passing the low end, what you can do is you can also boost the top end or boost the mid range. Mm-hmm. Of the sidechain frequency, so that way the compressor reacts more quickly and more often to the stuff in the middle.
Yeah.
So it kind of like does this whole EQ thing, but with a compressor.
And a good visual example is if you don't have FabFilter now, just so you know, they have free trials and they're pretty long trials. But in advanced mode, you can actually see the frequency spectrum that it's actually detecting. And you can actually tell it to focus on one or the other. So you have a visual aid on what it is you're actually doing. But a really good example of this is like S's, right? Like if you were to boost the S on the compressor, let's say you didn't like the sound of de-essers specifically. You just wanted to make sure, like, hey, every time the S hits, I want general compression. I don't necessarily want the S to be the only thing that goes down. I don't like the sound of it. This is a really good tool for that, you know, because now you're saying, okay, every time an S is too strong and you boost that in the sidechain, then great. You have your even compression versus a frequency-dependent compression.
There you go. Yeah. So that's our 10 tips from ChatGPT of how to use compression effect creatively.
Yeah.
And there's probably a bunch of other ways as well.
ChatGPT.
Yeah. If you have other ways of creatively using a compressor, please type it in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube. If you're not watching on YouTube, subscribe to our YouTube channel, mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. I think that's what it is. Yeah. mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. I think that's the fastest way to get there. It'll be on a channel called DK Mixes. It's my channel there. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic. You can see what we look like. You can judge our appearances. Also, Home Studio Heroes uploads there as well. And leave a comment. Yes, and we have listeners right now on the Twitch stream, because we're also live streaming on Twitch every Monday morning. Mm-hmm. When we record these episodes. That Yusufina says that they have subscribed. So thank you so much for subscribing on YouTube. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.